Discipline. What a great blessing, isn't it? Don't you love it? How many of you have small children? Oh, great. I've got a 10-year-old that we're raising. Jan and I are among the many grandparents who, in our culture, there are many grandparents raising their children's children. And we're in that process, and it's a really great blessing. And life can be so easy, can't it? When everything is going great, sometimes you can have your children to tell them to do something, and they will do it. And wow, what a pleasant time. When they are willing and you are willing, it is so easy and it is so, so much fun to have kids and to be around kids when everything is good and easy. But I don't know about yours, but my children got defiant every now and then. And it just is going to happen. They're going to get defiant. And they're like us. They are just like us. I've been teaching at Fried Hardeman. I am into almost halfway through my 41st year. I still do not like for my boss that I have worked so closely with for 25 years now. Billy Smith and I have been preaching together for 25 years, and we were great friends before that. But, you know, there's just something that kind of makes the hair on the back of my neck stand out when he says, listen, here's some administrative junk you've got to do, and you got to get it to me by tomorrow afternoon at 5. Y'all like that? You like being told what to do? We have a hard time with that, don't we? I like it when I see the garbage can in the kitchen ready to overflow, and I just tie it up and get it and set it out and go get another bag and put it in, and without Jan having to say, would you please get the garbage out? I've asked you 6 times now. Would you please get the garbage out? I don't like to be told what to do. I don't know many people that do. So we're all defiant in one way or another. And our children are just like us. But children are not always the problem. You know, sometimes when we start thinking about our children, and we start thinking about the pressures that they have, the pressures that we have, we get our feelings hurt. Sometimes husbands and wives have little problems with each other. Now, you all may be way too mature for that. But Jan and I still fuss a little bit after 45 years. We fuss a little bit about things. And if Jan and I have been fussing, and then Cora, our 10-year-old, comes up and wants something, I say, what do you want? You see, the kids are not always the problem. They have some good leadership sometimes in the wrong direction. We have to think about that as we think about discipline. Well, I can tell you this. One of the most significant things going in discipline is to be together. In our couple, Jan and Roy, I'm the soft head and the soft heart. I'm inclined to go farther than Jan is inclined to go. She's tough. I mean, she's tough. When she says this, that's the end. And hard to deal with sometimes. So I'm a little softer than she is about things, about the way I say things and about the way I do things with children. But I can tell you this, when we disagree, it's not with the kids, not in front of the kids. It's not while she's saying, you're going to do this. And I say, wait a minute, let's talk about that. I don't do that in front of the kids. Because, you see, you're training the children, or they are training you to get this difference going. And if you and your spouse disagree in front of kids, they got you. They're going to get you, and they're going to keep you. I read a book entitled Parenting. It was entitled Families. And Patterson was the author, and I read this book about 1980. I had fairly small children then, and I was interested in parenting. I had started trying to do some counseling and helping. And this book opened my eyes to a lot of things. Some of your children have trained you to be a yeller. Are you a yeller? If you do that again. I went to a place on one occasion, a home where I knew everybody. Had grown up, really, with this family. I was so young when I met them, I don't remember meeting them. I just knew them all my life. And I was at Freed Hardeman as a student, and I went back to this little country church to preach where I had grown up. And I was home with these people, and there was a guy there my age. He was in his 20s, and I was in my 20s. And his sister was a little older than we were, and his sister had a little 2 or 3 year old boy. And after lunch, we were sitting around in the living room and talking with the parents of this little boy, the grandparents, and Jan and me. And my buddy, that's my age, is off in the bedroom, and he's teaching this little kid an ugly word to come and call me. And so he gets this little boy primed. Little boy comes out, and he gets right up there in front of me, and he's kind of rocking back and forth. And he says, and he called me a really ugly name right in front of his parents and his grandparents. And I could just see my friend over there laughing. He thought that was the funniest thing, this little kid calling me an ugly name in front of all the adults. Immediately, what do you think was said? Anybody have an idea? His parents said, his mother said, boy, if you do that again, I'm going to whip you. He goes running back to his uncle. His uncle talks to him and gives him a high five and encourages him. In a few minutes, he comes back out and he stands in front of me. He's rocking. He says, and he called me the same name. This time, the grandmother spoke up. What do you think she said? Same thing. Boy, if you do that again, I'm going to whip you. The guy's got to be nearly 50 now, and he had never gotten a whipping. Our kids train us to threaten. They train us to yell. They train us to procrastinate and put off things. And they train us sometimes just to be out-and-out liars because we don't ever spank them. We don't ever ground them. We don't ever, and you can just fill in the blanks of what you say to your children. And so our kids train us. Agreeing is so important. Not being trained is so important. I recently read an article, and the title of it was Kid Run Homes. And it's talking about our culture where parents have gotten afraid of their kids. We're afraid. I'm afraid if I make my child go to Sunday school, they'll hate God. They'll hate the church. They'll hate, and they've just got all kinds of reasons and all kinds of fears. And one of the things that I spend a lot of time trying to help people understand is anytime, in any circumstance, when you make decisions out of fear like this, I mean, if there's a rattlesnake right there, and I'm going to tell you, out of fear, I would make the decision to jump as high and far away as I could. That makes sense. So we're not talking about absolute. But in situations where you either discipline or you don't, and a parent says, I'm afraid if I do this, they won't love me, they won't love God, they won't love the church, they'll rebel, they'll run away from home, I'm afraid. We make so many decisions out of fear. And when we do, right here's what we have. They've got us in a barrel. And they're teaching us, and they're disciplining us to permit them to live life the way they want to. So, what do we do? What do we do? We have to decide who we want to be and what we want to be. Now, if you were here last night, you saw these statistics, but I think it's relevant to discipline. What happens? This is not the statistical part, but I want to show you, I think, some statistics that I showed last night. This is one person's view of American families, and I'll share where this comes from in just a moment. This is not my thinking. These are quotes from a place that I will show you on the next slide. Modern Western families are not as a norm teaching self-discipline to their children. External discipline, that is, discipline administered forcibly by parents and society, does not always translate into self-discipline. Traditional values are usually interpreted by younger generations as old-fashioned and obsolete. For example, at Fried Hardeman, this kills my soul. We have the best kids in the world. But they don't want to sing the national anthem. They don't want to sing the alma mater. If I host chapel about every day, and if I say, would you stand and let us sing the national anthem, you can hear, oh, or if I say, let's stand and sing the alma mater, they will laugh. And so one day, I was just interviewing one of my large classes that I had in Marriage and the Family. I said, what is the deal? What is the problem with honoring our country by singing the national anthem? Why do students start mumbling and laughing when you want to sing the alma mater? What is the deal with that? And they all sat there, and I said, come on, tell me. I'm not going to turn you into the principal or anything. I'm just saying, I don't understand that. Why can we not honor our school and honor our country without it being a joke to the student body? Finally, one guy raised his hand and said, it's just old school. We don't care anything about that. It's old school to honor the country. It's old school to honor your school. They want something new and they want something exciting. And so traditional values, that wearing a hat in the house, trying to get college men to leave their caps in the room, is like trying to herd flies. They're going to wear a cap and it'll be a bad hair day every day if that's what it's about. But they want to have a cap on. And they don't want it. They don't even realize they have it on. It is not a matter of being rebellious. They're not saying, I don't care what you think. I don't care what you say. They don't see anything wrong with it, and therefore they don't think about it in the same way that you and I might think about it. So one of the things that we have to do is understand where we are, because our kids are being indoctrinated by a culture who doesn't see traditional values in the same way that your mama taught you and that you learned. So we have a real problem here. This person continues by saying that young parents protest. We must try to understand our children, and we must be better than our own parents. Is there anybody in the room besides me, when you were growing up and your mom and dad disciplined you in some way, said, I'll never do that to my kids. I'll never treat them like that. I said that. Guess what? We're doing it, aren't we? We find out mom and dad knew a whole lot. Now, there are some moms and dads that just are wrong in the way that they do things. And they're hurtful to their children, and it's not appropriate discipline. And we'll talk about that a little bit. But I think, this is Roy Sharp's opinion only, you have your own opinion. I think one of the worst things that my generation has done, and the generation before me a little bit has done, is to say, I want my kids to have it better than I had it. You ever hear anybody say that? You ever feel that way? I think one of the greatest mistakes that I made was I made life a gravy train for my kids, where they would have been better off if they'd have gone to the cotton fields with me like I did when I was a kid. You see, now you're talking these old values. They're not old values. God designed us to work. You know, I hear people sometimes say that work was one of the curses that God put on man after the fall in sin. You go back to Genesis 2. God required Adam and Eve to tend and cultivate the garden. Work was a part of what man did when he was created. And we are better people. We feel better about ourselves. We understand life better when we're trained to work. These traditional values of teaching kids that if they want an allowance, they have to work for it. There are a lot of young parents that had to go through that, and they don't want their kids to have to go. So here's your money. Let me just give you a gravy train. And I did it in part because my kids played sports all the time, and we were traveling, and they couldn't have a job in the same way that I did. Life is different. Life is different. But you see, I was different. I wasn't trying to be better than my mom in a way. I was just trying to do what I thought was the best thing for the moment, And I blew it because, you see, I was trying to be the best dad I could be, and I needed to give a stronger degree of work ethic to my kids. This guy says this pseudoscientific attitude is not supported by hard evidence. It has caused the American family, that is in general, maybe not yours, don't get offended if you've done everything exactly the way it ought to be done and you don't have any problems at all and you understand discipline to the nth degree, far beyond I do. This is not talking about you, but it's talking about most of us. We have been caused by this ideal to forgive, to turn a blind eye to small delinquent behavior in young children. They're just being a boy. They're just being a kid. Maybe just three, or they're just six. They'll get over that. And so we don't do anything. We don't discipline. We just let them go, and we let them behave the way they behave. Every three-year-old is going to misbehave if you let them do what they want to. If you just let them be three, every 10-year-old is going to misbehave if you just let them go and do what they want to. Every 50-year-old is going to misbehave if you let them go and do what they want to. Everybody needs discipline. In fact, in my marriage and family seminar, in relationships, I do a session on relationships in general, and I teach that every relationship needs discipline. Now, my wife is an expert disciplinarian. I'm sitting on the couch on Saturday afternoon watching a football game. She'll come through with a load of clothes that she just got out of the dryer. She'll dump them in my lap and say, would you mind folding those while you're watching the football game? You see, that's discipline. She needs some. What she's really saying is, please help me. I need some help. We came in from work one day. She used to be the audiovisual librarian at Freed Hardeman, and I picked her up at 5, and I'm so hungry and tired, I cannot stand myself, and I come dragging into the kitchen, and she looks at the sink, and there are two sinks there, and they're both full of dirty dishes. I've got a sweet wife, don't I? Yeah, the Swains know her. She's a sweetheart. She's so sweet. In fact, when she saw those dirty dishes, she turned to me and she said, boy, we got to get those dishes cleaned up and we've got to cook supper. Which one of those do you want to do? Now, how can you be sweeter than that, giving me a choice? I could either clean up the dishes or I could cook supper. You see, it's a matter of discipline. What she's saying is, don't even think about getting the paper and going in there and kicking back in the recliner until supper's ready. I need some help. Every relationship, including husbands and wives, need discipline. And surely our children that are just learning about life need discipline. And here is where that came from, an article by Jacques Springer. He's a special education teacher in Brownsville, Texas. That's his point of view. Now, these are some of the statistics that you saw last night if you were present and in the auditorium. Last night, my topic was marriage is honorable. What happens to our kids when marriage is not held in an honorable sight by husband and wife? What happens to our kids? And you can see the same thing when we refuse to discipline. When we let our kids be who they want to be instead of helping them become who they need to be. When marriages fail, when kids are left alone, and I can tell you, in most divorce cases, parents are not together in discipline at all. In fact, the kids are used. In the marriage counseling I do, kids are so often used. Mom will get them over here and try to tell them how bad dad is, and dad's over here trying to tell them how lazy mom is, and they're just going like this, and each of them is letting the kid do whatever they want to try to get them on their side. That's a very common kind of problem. And then some of them are just too tired, too frustrated, too hurt, in the middle of problems to do discipline at all. So what happens to our kids in these settings? Higher teen alcohol drug rates, more domestic violence, more sexual assaults by teens, more sexually active teens, more likely to smoke. Teens are more likely to use drugs. They're more likely to be involved in greater overall violence. There's high step-parent and other individuals in the family sexually abusing people where divorce is occurring. greater depression, higher rates of suicide. What about their achievement level? These kids, and looking at school and looking at life, these kids are more likely to repeat a grade, more likely to be expelled, more likely to have developmental problems, that is, they don't mature along the way as they could and should. More and worse social problems are in the lives of these kids. Lower reading, spelling, and math scores. They have low self-confidence, low self-esteem. They have difficulty with peer pressure relationships and more likely to drop out of school. And then if you look at the overall social impact, what's it going to be? Well, increased out of wedlock births, higher rate of delinquency in crimes, higher risk of being a crime victim. Isn't that interesting? More violent crimes, more teens carrying weapons at Northside High School. Just a couple of days ago, I mentioned last night, there were two kids shot because gangs got involved in problems at Northside High School right there at 20 miles from Freed Hardeman's campus. And these kids got into a fight. Two people pulled out a gun. Two people got shot. It's amazing the level of violence that we have in our culture, and a whole lot of it is a lack of discipline and a lack of self-discipline. There are more crimes leading to jail. There's an increased need for social services and a higher risk of poverty. That's a pretty sad story, isn't it? As we think about West Palm Beach, it's there. It's here. It's not out there somewhere. It's here. If I'm teaching in Henderson, Tennessee, it's not out there somewhere. It's not down in West Palm Beach. It's right here in Henderson, Tennessee, anywhere you want to go. And we really have a major struggle with regard to it. So what must we do and not do with regard to disciplining our children? Where do we go and what do we do? Well, the first thing is, we must discipline. Do not fail to discipline. No matter how afraid you are, don't be afraid. When I think about my mom, I don't think my mom ever reacted to fear. If she did, she hid it quite well. I think she understood the need. She had 9 kids, and my dad died when I was 5, and she had 9 kids between the age of 3 and 17. I can't feature that. I had 3 and thought I'd die some days trying to keep up with them. But my mom was a tough, tough disciplinarian. She didn't say, boy, if you do that again, I'm going to whip you. And if you come back and did it again, there was no talk at that point. My mom has beaten me to death several times. Deserved them all. But she resurrected me back with love. My mom knew what discipline was about, what it was needed. I have 7 college and university degrees. My mom didn't have an 8th grade education. But the wisdom she had has so far exceeded mine, it is unthinkable. She couldn't tell you what a bachelor's degree was, I don't think. She wouldn't know the difference between a master's degree and a doctorate. But I'll tell you this, she understood discipline and she did not fail. The rod and rebuke give wisdom. My mom understood that. And she didn't let the fear of me loving or not loving her, or loving God or not loving God, she didn't let that be a factor. A child left to himself brings shame to his mother. I'm telling you, we need parents that stop leaving their kids to themselves. When I think about withholding correction, do not withhold correction from a child. If you beat him with a rod, he won't die. You shall beat him with a rod. And look at that last statement. Is that not what we want? Aren't we wanting our kids to be Christ-like? Aren't we wanting our kids to ultimately be with God forever? And when we use appropriate discipline, you see, the problem with our culture, if you start talking about beating a child with a rod, we're talking in our culture about abuse. Nobody is going to want to listen to that passage in our culture, hardly, because unfortunately, we have parents that have gone beyond discipline, appropriate discipline, and they've gone into abuse. There's a big, big difference. I've been hit with a belt. I've been hit with tree limbs. My mom would make me go pull one off. I've been hit with a cotton stalk that still had green bowls on it. And you probably don't know what a cotton stalk is, but those green bowls were about that big and they might as well have a rock on that thing. I've been hit with a cotton stalk that had the bowls left on it. I don't know all the things I've been hit with, but I've never been abused. I have never been abused. I was playing football in the street one day in Memphis. After we moved to Memphis, we had a street that some of my buddies lived on in the neighborhood. And the only people that ever came down that little street, they lived on it. And we played, it was our athletic field. We played baseball and football and all kinds of stuff out there in the street. We were playing football one day, beautiful day. I had permission to be there. My mom comes driving up. I don't think anything about it. I go running up to see what she wants. I thought she might be telling me she's going somewhere. I go running up to the car. She gets out of the car before I get there, and I walked up, and she slapped me really hard right in front of all my buddies. Would you do that to your children? You see, most of you wouldn't even consider it. You would be thinking abuse. You would be thinking, I can't do that. And the truth is, in our culture, you might get turned in. You might get turned in for abuse. But all my mom was saying was, listen, sweetheart, this is Wednesday night, and you forgot about Bible study. And here you are playing when you should be home ready to go to Bible study. Would you please get in the car so we can go home and get to Bible study? That's all my mom was saying. And I knew that. Once I understood why she was coming, I'd forgotten all about it. You see, we think much more about how it's going to look and how I feel about that instead of this bottom line, trying to get people, our children, to listen to what is good and right so that we can do what we need to do. So do not fail to discipline. Number two is do follow God's example. God's a teacher. God's a teacher. Psalm 94 and 12 says, blessed is the man whom you instruct, O Lord, and teach out of your law. Have you ever tried to teach when you didn't have any authority to discipline? You can forget it. Just turn them loose and let them go. If you don't take authority, have you ever been in a room when a substitute teacher came that was afraid to do anything? Boy, kids run those teachers nuts, don't they? Because you see, the teachers know they got them. I spent a year while I was doing a master's degree out in Oklahoma substituting. The school system loved it because I was a male, but they especially loved it because I didn't take the stuff off the kids. I remember I was assigned one day to substitute in a physical education class, and they were having a softball tournament. All I had to do was check the roll and make sure the kids were there, get them start playing and just be there and make sure everything went well in the tournament. Well, we got ready to go in this one period, and there were a couple of little hot dogs, little smart mouth eighth graders. They probably don't even have any of those down here in West Palm. But out in Oklahoma City, these little smart mouth eighth graders, they'd already said a couple of things to me. And it was time to go. I said, okay, you guys get all the stuff and let's go in. And this one guy had a ball and a bat in his hand. There was another, his buddy was out at shortstop. And he hit the ball really hard. And it was one of those neighborhoods that didn't have a fence around the schoolyard. And the ball rolled all the way across the outfield there and into the yard across the street. And those guys took off running in. They didn't think I saw that. And so we got into the dressing room, and it was one of those old dressing rooms where the dressing room is downstairs in a basement-like area, and the coach's office is down there, big picture window where the coach could see what's going on out there and help control the crowd. And so I said, hey, you guys, I called them by their name. I said, you guys come into my office a minute. And I said, why did you hit the ball? He didn't want to talk about it. I said, and why did you let it go? I saw you let it go through on purpose, and you let it go across the street. And then both you guys know you left the ball over in the yard next door. I said, why'd you do that? They laughed at, grinned, little smart mouth kids. I just took a chair like this, and I said, would you please bend over and put your hands in that chair? And this was at a time when, back in the late 60s, right around 70, and you could spank kids. And the teacher had a baseball bat that he had made into a paddle. I played baseball all the way through college and beyond. I kind of enjoyed that. So I picked that up, and this little guy's standing there, and he's been over, and it's down in the basement area, and I gave him one lick, and it sounded like a cannon going off down in that basement. Everybody outside that picture window looked in, and they saw the second lick. They saw me get this guy to bend over, and I hit him one lick each. I'm sure it hurt, but it was no abuse. And I said, now you guys, both of you, I want you to run, and I'm going to go to the door and watch. I want you to run, get that ball, and bring it back to me, and I want you to do that again when I'm here. And so they took off running. They got the ball. They brought it back. All that day, I'd go through the hallway, and I'd hear somebody say, well, Mr. Sharp will get you if you don't behave. And you see, I taught a year. Those two licks gave me some authority with all the kids. I didn't have any trouble with anybody the rest of that school year that I went to that school. You see, teach. We have to teach, and discipline is necessary to teach. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Our kids are so foolish sometimes, aren't they? So are we. So are we. You see, you may be a person who is rolling your eyes about beating with a rod. You're rolling your eyes at God. You're not rolling your eyes at me. Those are messages from God, the mind and the heart of God. And the message is very clear. We must discipline, and we must follow what God's example is. And God is showing us through His Word that discipline is very important and how much we need knowledge and the fear of the Lord. If you were here last night and heard Dan Winkler, you know there are at least two words for fear. One of them is phobia. Matthew 10:28 says, do not fear the one who is able to destroy your body. It's the word phobia, the Greek word from which we get phobia. But fear the one who is able to destroy both body and soul in hell. It's not the word that means just respect. It's phobia as well. Fear the one who is able to destroy both body and soul in hell. It doesn't make any sense at all for me not to be, to some degree, if I'm living in sin, afraid of what God will do to me. God teaches us and He warns us. And if we follow God's example, what He gives us as an example in the Bible, we're going to be afraid. But when you go back, as Dan pointed out last night, to Ecclesiastes 12, verses 12 and 13, let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Let's fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole of man. That word fear is a Hebrew word for meaning respect, kind of fear. Can I illustrate that? I told you about my mom. I was sitting on a cotton sack in a cotton field up in Lake County near Riverfoot Lake in Tennessee. It's about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I don't even remember now how a bunch of us young guys got off together. That was pretty unusual. But we got tired. We'd been working since about 6 that morning, and it's about 5 in the afternoon. We know we're not going to quit until 6, but no adults were around, and we all sat down, had some cotton in our sacks to pad us, and so we sat down. We were laughing and telling stories. Well, we were so involved in our conversation, we didn't see my mom sneak up. And this is one of those times she pulled up a cotton stalk. And she walked up behind me. I wondered why she didn't walk up behind my brother or somebody else that was in that group. But she walked up behind me, and she hit me right here with a cotton stalk. It wrapped around my face. If you know what a cotton bowl is, when it ripens, it opens up, and when you pick it by hand, you reach in and get it. Well, these little tips are pretty tough. And that one of those came around and stuck me in the face, and little red places, little blood came up. And those cotton bowls, those green bowls, hit me upside the head as well. And you see, when I start thinking about the fear of my mom, I was probably 12 years old at the time, pretty big boy. I was afraid of my mama. Let me tell you what. I guarantee you, we didn't get caught sitting on our sacks again when we were supposed to be working. I was afraid of her. My mom was tough. My mom lived to be 87 years old. She died in 1999, in February of 1999. I remember Thursday night of lectureship. I was sitting listening to the lecture and someone came and said, there's a phone call for you. And I meant to go the next day and stay the whole weekend, but the phone call was that mom had died. I was with her every day that week, except that Thursday. And I'm telling you, she was weak. She's gotten to be a little shriveled up lady. She wasn't very strong. If she'd have hit me, she couldn't have hurt me too bad. But can I tell you, I was not one bit afraid of my mom. But I loved her and respected her so much, I would do anything for her. I would love it if she could be right here in this room today. You see, I went from being afraid to respecting her. And that's what God wants when we talk about the fear of the Lord. God doesn't want us sitting in here shaking in our boots about going to hell. He didn't give us a spirit of fear, phobia. He gave us a spirit of love and of power, 2 Timothy 1 and verse 7 says. So when we start thinking about what God wants, we preach about an eternal place of punishment that ought to shake us up if we're living outside of a relationship with God. But when we live in that relationship of love and respect, I don't spend hardly any time at all even thinking about hell. That's not something I worry about. Because of trust in God. Do I not worry about it because I'm so good and I'm exactly what I ought to be? Absolutely not. None of us is what we ought to be. But what I am is a person saved by the grace of God because I trust Him and I'm willing to try to do what He says. And on the basis of faith, I am feeling comfortable about my relationship with God today, and I don't stand up here shaking in my boots about going to hell. I would more readily talk to you about my prospects of going to heaven. Not because I'm good, but because God is good. And you see, when we start thinking about our example, Hebrews 12 and verse 10 says about earthly parents, they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them. But He for our profit, that we may be partakers of His holiness. You're going to follow God's example? You are going to discipline your children for their profit. We're not trying to hurt our kids. We're not trying to keep them from doing things that are fun when we ground them or make them do work or we apply any kind of discipline that we do. We're trying to help them profit by life's experience. And if our attitude is this, and we're following the example of God, our discipline is going to be much better. Boy, this is hard. Do not provoke children to wrath. Sometimes parents have their own thing going, and they don't really think beyond what they think. And our thinking is so narrow sometimes and so limited sometimes. And we are so hard and we are so harsh as parents sometimes that we become people who provoke our children to wrath. There's a better way. There's a better way. And the better way is to bring them up in the training and admonition. That's New King James Version. New King James terminology, other translations. Some of them say discipline in the place of training. Some of them say instruction in the place of admonition. Training. Any of you guys ever been or gals ever been in the military? How much fun is that? My son graduated from Marine boot camp at Parris Island. You ever been to a ceremony like that? It still is the most impressive ceremony I've ever been to in my life. There were hundreds of people out there. There was a lady sergeant out there calling out orders. And she would say, right face, and I'm telling you, looking out across through there, you would think it was one person. Man, they were, everything was like one person. The whole ceremony was so unbelievably great. When we started driving out of the place, we had a long conversation about several things, but one of the things I said was, John, that was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. Everybody moved just like it was one person, and I talked about my amazement at that. He looked at me and he said, Dad, they don't call that ground out there the grinder for nothing. They're out there every day, he said, every day. And they're going through those drills. And for that ceremony, they practiced and practiced and practiced, and they worked and they heard those commands and they practiced exercising those commands until it was like one person doing it. That's what training is about. Now, I'm probably an exception in a lot of ways, but one of the ways is, you know, my children, when they were growing up, when it came time for them to be big enough to clean up their own room, I would just say, listen, Meg, would you go clean up your room, please? And she'd say, yes, sir. And she'd run right up there and clean it up. And I'd ask one time, and she'd go do it. I would say, John, listen, I need you to go rake the leaves around this area and clean that up. Would you? Yes, sir, Dad. I'll be glad to do that. And he'd run out there and clean that up. And Rachel's our baby. And when she got big enough, I would say, Rachel, listen, I need you to go in there and help Mom clean the dishes up. I know you're watching TV, but would you please turn the TV off for a little while and go help Mom? She'd say, yes, sir, Dad, I'd love to do that. Is that your experience with your kids? Mine either. If I was being serious, I'd be lying like a dog. We have to train, don't we? They don't even know what you mean when you say clean up the room. So what do? You train. You train, and training requires discipline. And unless we do that, we're not going to have the kind of children we want. So we must not be people who provoke, but in an appropriate way. We train or discipline, and we admonish or instruct in ways that our children can take in the best way that they can understand. Your kids ever ask why? All right, why don't you turn the TV off and get this done right now? Why do I have to do it now? And you give them a reason, and they say, well, why? You try to explain it in a different way, and they say, why? And then what do you wind up having to say? I said it, and I'm your dad. Get in there and do it. And so we have to wind up saying, why do we say that? Because no amount of explanation is going to be sufficient for them. They're just going to have to learn. And so we keep on instructing, disciplining, and we try to do it in a way. I just tell my kids, listen, when I was your stage in life, I didn't want to do it either. But I had to do it, and you got to do it. It's a part of growing up. It's a part of learning. It's a part of trying to be an adult. Do not discipline in anger. Boy, our culture needs this. Our culture really needs this. There's so much pressure on parents today. Both parents work outside the home. They come home tired. They haven't been with the kids much, and the kids want attention, and parents are not ready to give attention. They're starving. They're hungry. Everything's a mess in the house. There's so many problems that have to be dealt with, and here are these kids who are the most precious possession parents have. And they're too tired. They're too hungry. They're too frustrated. They're probably angry with each other by now if they rode home together. And if they met at the door, didn't ride home together, they're probably frustrated with each other by now. And now we've got to deal with kids. And we're frustrated about things. I saw a video of a daddy picking a little infant, less than a year old, shaking that infant, as though that would matter to the infant. But what it did do was create brain damage, and the baby died. And the parent didn't mean to take the baby's life. The parent was just so frustrated that they thought, this will stop it now, and I need it stopped right now. And so we discipline in anger. Ephesians 4:26 says, be angry and do not sin. That's hard for most of us, isn't it? When we get angry, Nothing seems to go right. Nothing seems right. But there are some things worth being angry about. Disobedience of our children is worth being frustrated about and could bring us to a point of anger. But it must never, if we want to do what's right, bring us to discipline in anger. We need to back off and wait until that anger subsides and come back with a clear and full mind and set our children down and say, the reason I didn't spank you a while ago, or the reason I didn't discipline you a while ago and the way I'm going to, is I was angry and I didn't want to do anything I shouldn't do. So here we go. I'm now thinking clearly, and here's what I'm going to do, and you know why. And they do know why. So we don't discipline in anger. Parents argue about the rights and wrongs of child discipline. One parent wants to get it over with and spank them, and the other believes that what we need to do is sit down and discuss this as a family. And so the parents are at odds. Remember, we're talking about agreement back at the first. I would tell you, I think one of the keys to proper discipline is for a mom and a dad to agree. In your marriages, is one of you tough and the other not quite as tough? In our relationship, Jan's the hard head. Woo, she's tough. I'm the soft head and the soft heart in our parenting relationship. Our kids would always come to me if they wanted to ask something because they knew I'm the soft heart and the soft head. And early on when our children were small and they were coming to me, I would say, well, listen, here's what I think with my soft head, soft heart. And the kids would go do something and Jan would come and say, did you tell them they could do that? Did y'all ever have that happen in your relationship? And I would say, well, yeah, I didn't think there was any big deal about that. And she would go into telling me what the big deal was to her. And now we're in a frustrated position. You see, I'm wanting to tell her why this is not a big deal. And she's wanting to argue to me why it is a big deal. And boom, here we go. And you see, it just creates such a major problem and could lead to the point before this one. Disciplining while you're angry. Well, I'll do what you want and just go in there and you don't think it's the right thing to do, but you do it because you're angry and you want to get back at your spouse. You see, we do that, but we must learn to agree, discipline appropriately. The difference between child abuse and discipline is like the difference between night and day. One produces insecure, unhappy, and undeveloped children. A child that grows up with emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse. Is it time for me to quit? I don't even know when I started. But don't discipline in anger. Those kids, you can just, they're textbook, almost every one of them. If they've grown up with abuse, they're in trouble. But if you discipline properly, you develop a secure kid, a joyful child whose potential is being realized. At Fried Hardeman, in my classes, the kids want to know what's expected of them. They don't want me coming in there surprising them. They want to know what's expected. Or they want to know how this is going to be graded. If I come in there and I'm used to grading this way and I say, well, I decided to do this time, and they had no clue and their grade is lower, they're going to be so frustrated with me. They want to know what's expected of them. And then if I judge their work in a low grade way, and they know they didn't do it in the way that it was expected, they understand it. And they can still be secure. They can still be joyful because they understand and they know. Discipline to correct and train the child. You know, here's what we want. The peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. And that comes from appropriate, proper chastening and discipline. So we need to discipline, do discipline, to correct and train children. They need correcting. They need the training. I am sorry that I did not do this as quickly as I should. So I'm rushing through these last points. But do teach self-discipline. Boy, this is a major, major problem in a person's life. The most miserable people in West Palm Beach, Florida, are undisciplined people. It doesn't matter if they're poor, rich, in the middle. It doesn't matter if they're the brightest people in town or the dumbest people in town. If they are not self-disciplined, boy, these passages say it all, don't they? God knows us and God understands us. We have to be temperate. We have to be disciplined. God wants us to think about what we have, spirit of fear, the power of love, and a sound mind, and then set the proper course for life. Training. Boy, that passage has killed a lot of souls, hasn't it? Parents, when their kids have grown up and gone away, they kill themselves emotionally by thinking they've done things wrong, and they don't give the grown person any credit for choosing the wrong way. We have a could talk about that a lot, but we want to emphasize the training aspect. You train them in the way that they should go when they're young. Make the most of those early years. You bring them up. You teach them from their youth up in the nurture and admonition, the training, the discipline, the instruction of the Lord, and you will bless your children more than you could ever think about. I'd be glad for anybody that wants to stay a minute or two. If you have a question, I would be glad to chat with you a little bit about things. Thank you for coming. It's a great, great day for this church, I think, with all the good things that are going on here and that are being talked about.